Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with Jason Allen. He is the president of Northern Insurance Group, and we're going to be talking today about the Affordable Care Act, the wilderness of healthcare reform. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're very welcome. You know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of people are talking today about the Affordable Care Act, and we have certainly had guests on the show that over the last year or so have talked about different things that could happen, might happen, should happen. Well, guess what? It's here and it's now happening. And of course, it's 2014 because we're here in January, and it's the beginning of the real things that are happening. I'm sure there's a lot of things that are happening out there, but I want to know how it really affects individuals, how it affects companies upcoming. And that's what I'd like to talk about today. So I know you're all ready to go. You're so excited about the Affordable Care Act, the AC. I can see it in your face.
Very exciting stuff.
Very exciting stuff. Well, you know what it is? It's important because business leaders and HR professionals really do need to understand what could happen this year and get prepared for 2015 when the employer mandate hits in terms of that. So let's talk about it. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing as the next step that companies need to look at. What are the things that are happening?
I think it's going to break down into two sections. You're going to have the small employers, which are going to be 50 employees and under, and the employers that are over that size. And really, the way we're seeing it is there's a lot of employers with 15 or fewer employees where the employees are going to the employer and actively asking them to drop their health insurance because they're eligible for subsidies on the exchange and they can save money by going to the exchange.
Tell me about what employers are telling you about that. It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? Because employers have been the backbone of healthcare, right? You know, the employers predict.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the flaws with the Affordable Health Care Act in the sense that there's penalties and taxes on employers for not following certain mandates. And if you look at the philosophy behind employers over the years, they genuinely want to help their employees, which is providing employer-sponsored health insurance benefits. And it's also a way for them to attract and retain employees.
Yeah, and so if you take that and you're saying that employees are asking in many cases, hey, I could get a better quote-unquote deal on the exchange, that's interesting because employers typically pay a good chunk of health care. And so it's interesting that they're looking at that as an option.
Absolutely. An example is the employer pays 100% of the single rate for the employee, typical in the United States. And an employee goes to the exchange. They look at their health insurance options. Then they look at what their subsidy could be. They're excited about that. But if their employer provides health insurance benefits, they're not going to be eligible for that subsidy. So you're seeing employees go to the employer and say, hey, if you drop it, I'll save money.
Does it make a difference if there is a family, let's say, you know, two income, two kids, and typically employers don't subsidize necessarily the remaining part of the group. Does that have a incentive for them to go to the exchange as well?
That's where the employee or the individual could be negatively affected. Because if the spouse's employer provides those benefits and pays for those benefits, then the family as a whole is not eligible for a subsidy, which is unfortunate.
Why is that? What is it that
it's the way the law is written. It's one of the unintended consequences.
Do you see anywhere that might change in the next year or so, or do you think that that's pretty much built in solid in stone?
Ideally, both sides get together and focus on what's good about the law and try to fix some of those things that are the unintended consequences that are not positive aspects of the law.
So let's continue the conversation and focus on under 50 because I want to stay in that group. And then next segment, we can talk about over 50. I think that makes sense. Give me some of the overview of, you know, what it is that employers need to look at now. What are some of the things that they need to be aware of as they start heading into this new year?
They're definitely going to want to start looking at their employer-sponsored plans at least 90 to 120 days before their renewal. most small employers across the United States have already received notices from the health providers with an option to do an early renewal or off-cycle renewal. So there's been a lot of employers who renewed on December 1st, because anything after that, January 1st, 2014, where we are now, is going to be affected by the Affordable Care Act, and many of those plans are no longer going to be offered. So employers are going to see artificial increases because of the benefit changes.
You say artificial increases. Is that because insurance companies haven't fully yet wrapped themselves around to what really the numbers are going to be?
I think the insurance carriers have done a decent job at understanding the impact from an actuary standpoint. But artificially, I mean, some of the plans with a $5,000 deductible are no longer going to be eligible. So therefore, the insurance carriers are going to have to meet those standards. And here's a plan with a $2,500 or a $3,500 deductible. And therefore, that's going to cause rates to go up. On one hand, rates went up. On the other hand, employees got a better benefit.
This is an interesting question that plays on that a little bit, because I know employers that have received the letters that say that your plan is no longer eligible. Heck, I was one of those employers that received a letter that said it's no longer eligible. When I look at the plan and I think to myself and I look through, I go, what else could possibly be missing within this plan? What are you seeing in the plans that are the reason for them no longer being eligible?
So a lot of employers went to higher out-of-pocket costs to manage the expenses to the company. And under the Affordable Care Act, you can't have deductible limits at a certain threshold. So therefore, that's going to bring those deductibles down, but it's going to increase the rates. That's good for me as a regular Jason walking down the street, in the sense that my deductible is now $2,500 versus $10,000 or $7,500, but the rates have gone up.
We've certainly heard on the news, quote unquote, the news, that people are finding that the rates are going up significantly. Mm-hmm. 30, 40, 50, 100 plus 200%. Are you seeing that?
All over. We're licensed in 28 states, so we're able to go out there and really get a barometer reading of what's going on across the United States. So we're seeing what's going on across the United States, and ultimately it's all over the board. A lot of it's depending on the individual's age, but also it's the state they're living in, and then you factor in the plan design.
So we're seeing increases across the board. Employers are trying to make a decision whether to keep coverage, not keep coverage. So let's talk about it from an employer standpoint. What are now the benefits to still employing workers and keeping their benefit in terms of health care?
When we sit down with clients, from a consultative standpoint, you're going to look at it. So if you're a small employer and you're paying on average $100,000 to $150,000 in premium for employee benefits, and now it's every citizen walking down the street, it's their responsibility to have health insurance. It's not my job as the employer to provide those benefits. So therefore, if I can save that money, do I pass that along to everybody and have them sharing it equally? Do I hire more workforce? Now all of a sudden I've freed up that capital. But on the flip side is, if my competitors are still offering private sponsored benefits that are much richer than what's available on the exchange, I'm doing myself a disservice by discontinuing it.
There's going to be a Cadillac tax on higher plans that are going to be coming up in, is it 2017?
2018.
It was 17 or 18. You're talking about richer benefit plans. Is there a threshold? Is there a number? Is there something so an employer will say, yes, I can still offer up to this, but I can't pass this point, or I can readjust? How does that work?
That's one of the things that we're hopeful both sides of the aisle will focus on, because in 2018, the threshold for the 40% Cadillac tax or excise tax that every employer should be aware of is on an individual level of $10,200 in benefits, and on a family level is $27,500. So as medical inflation increases, does that Cadillac tax equal a benefit plan with a $500 deductible? Or is that a benefit plan in the Northeast where it's a $3,500 deductible and the cost of care is more expensive? So they really need to focus on the Cadillac tax and what it's intended for.
So it's not currently now geographically balanced.
Correct.
Even though I know rates are geographically challenged, I know, for example, in the state of Maine, I think there's 7 different zones or areas, and across the country, we have tons of different zones for pricing. So that part of the Affordable Care Act catalog area has nothing to do with that.
Correct. If you go out west, there's a lot more competition amongst hospitals, providers, and carriers. When you go to the Midwest, there's going to be less competition, and therefore the pricing structure is going to be significantly different.
Interesting. So if we're talking about a small group of people, less than 50 full-time employees, and we're going to, just to make sure we've done this before, but I'm going to do it again. Full-time is, for the Affordable Care Act, 30 hours, correct?
Correct.
And so, segue note for just 2 seconds. How many employers do you see at the 48, 47, 46 level saying, I'm not going to be bringing on more full-timers, and I'm just not going to do that and get to that point?
The majority of clients that we've spoken with that are at that level are not going to be hiring anybody else because they don't want to cross that threshold.
It's so dramatically sad that we've got to a point that we're going to limit ourselves because of a law.
Absolutely. One thing they should do is they should look at, and I'm hoping they do this, is making the full-time or FTE, full-time equivalent, 40 hours instead of the 30. I spoke with Susan Collins.
Susan Collins, meaning the senator from Maine.
Yes. Spoke with Senator Collins roughly a month ago, and she is going to look to pass legislation to implement that, to make the work week 40 hours.
Well, that has been the staple of the U.S. workforce for as long as anybody can imagine. I think there's support on both sides of the aisle, and there's support from union and employees, both sides of the demographic.
Yes.
Okay. So we've talked about full-time, under 50, small group. Do you think part-times have an effect to this? Because I do know there's a formula, or some sort of formula, that says if you have 43 full-timers, but you have 20 or 30 part-timers, that does count towards your full-time ratio. Could explain that a little.
So what's going to happen is if you have 2 part-times, those are going to equal 1 FTE, or full-time equivalent. So now, to use your example, if you're at 43 and you have those 20 part-timers working 28 to 30 hours, those 20 part-time employees equal 10 full-time employees.
So it's a 2-to-1 ratio.
In theory.
Theory, okay.
And now you're over that 50 full-time equivalent, and that's where those employers will get into the taxes and the penalties.
Do seasonal workers count in those numbers?
Yes.
So is there, like you have a 2-to-1 formula for part-time, is that the same type of formula for seasonal as well?
It's going to be a bit more complex. But yes, they will be all be factored in.
It will be. And yep. My understanding of seasonal is they have to work less than 120 days.
Correct.
Okay, good. All right. So we've kind of established some of the ground rules of what the Affordable Care Act means for employers under 50. We've kind of talked about how it works. We're going to talk about the positive side on the next segment coming up. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and on News Talk WLOB. And we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to CMAcareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
In today's digital age of instant communication, the art of conversation is being lost. Too often, verbal communication is reduced to shouting, not talking. Join me, Steve Woods, also known as Steve-O, for Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, for inspired conversations with extraordinary guests. We'll talk sports, health, green, and life its own self. Catch Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on News Talk WLOB, AM 1310, streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And today we're talking with the one, the only.
The only.
Would you like me to just say the one, the only? Even though I understand that I'm going to keep, I'm not saying your name because you're a Miami fan. And while I'm sure you have Florida as a state that you work in, I am not a Miami fan. So we're going to move on with, and we're talking football here, but Jason Allen, the president of Northern Insurance Group. That's okay. We forgive you for your sports.
Thank you.
As a New England fan, I have to do that.
Yep.
So we've talked about the under 50 employed company. And we've kind of talked some of the challenges. What are some of the benefits to employers that have under 50 that this Affordable Care Act actually does for them?
I think some of the big benefits, they've been in place over the last 2 years and more so over the last 12 months, is that now there's no more lifetime limits on health insurance plans. And that's critically important for someone who has a sick child and they've had $500,000 to $1 million in benefits at a young age. They've blown through their lifetime maximums. Take those away, that's a positive. I think it's also a positive that there's no more pre-existing conditions. There's many people out there who have pre-ex, and again, now they don't have to worry about which carrier they're going to go to and why, or why they can't go to that carrier. The other thing that's still positive or negative, depending who you ask, is a lot of people like the fact they can cover their children to age 26 under their health insurance plan. It does cost money to do that. However, the child who doesn't have a job or the child who works somewhere that doesn't provide benefits, they're eligible for that insurance now. And I think that part, or that one stipulation, is actually working against Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, because the goal is to get as many young people covered into this as possible. And if they're going to stay on their parents' plan, that they're going to take away from going on the individual plan. So I think they're going to look at that as well over the next couple of years.
Well, it's certainly a question as to how many young people have been signing up. And I know that certainly even here in January, we're still talking about the numbers, waiting for final numbers to come out, obviously. But it's a little shaky right now in terms of the numbers that are out there. You have some information on U.S. citizens, legal residents to have qualifying health care. There's a tax penalty that might be out there. And I think it'd just be good to have people understand that there is an individual responsibility for all U.S. citizens and what that is.
Yes, the penalty is going to be phased in starting in 2014, which is now, and the minimum threshold is going to be $95. It's going to be based on a percentage of your adjusted gross income. And over the next 3 years, it's going to continue to ratchet up. And when we get to 2016, it's going to be 2.5% of your taxable income.
That could be quite substantial.
It could be. And we've dealt with a lot of folks that have come in or called into the office, and we help them through the exchange, look at the subsidy that they're eligible for, and their monthly premium for a gold plan works out to roughly $315 a month. But their penalty for not having health insurance is anywhere between $95 and $295. Many folks have just said, I'll take the penalty. And that's the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It really is a question. And most, when you think about young people at 26, 27 years old, they're coming off their plan, they probably don't have, they're probably at their first, second job, maybe at that point. It's not the biggest paying job. It's probably an average income of $30,000, $35,000, maybe, if they've done really well. Maybe in the high 20s, every dollar counts. And plus, I'm invincible in my 20s, right? That's the reality of, I remember the 20s, you never get hurt.
Never get sick, never get hurt. And that's going to be one of the challenges that they're going to continue to fight. And the invincibility, like you just brought up, and also trying to get the younger population and generation to recognize that having healthcare is critically important. And if you have to have auto insurance to be able to drive your automobile, how do we get the healthcare mentality to be the same?
No, I understand. All right, we've talked about the under 50. Now let's talk about the over 50 employer responsibilities, employer responsibilities, for employers with 50 or more full-time employees. So the mandate was postponed into 2015. However, there are some things that still apply. What are some of the things that still apply this year in 2014?
Well, 2014, it's going to be status quo. All plans have to meet the minimum essential health benefits, and that's laid out, and that's what the carriers are either canceling or non-renewing those plans. And when we get to 2015, any employer that has 50 or more employees, if they don't provide health insurance that meets the minimum essential coverage, they're going to be subject to a $2,000 penalty per person. And
$2,000 per person.
Per person, with the asterisk being the first 30 employees are excluded from that. So you have some employers that are looking at it. If they have 65 employees and they're paying $250,000 to $350,000 a year in premium out of the employer's pocketbook, they look at the penalty and they say, okay, if we have 65 employees minus 30, that means we've got 35 times 2,000. That's a heck of a savings by dropping the health insurance.
That's interesting. I mean, I think one of the things that I ask is you can't force people to buy or get health care, at least in theory.
The Supreme Court did.
I'm saying in theory, you can't make somebody buy health care in the sense of, and if an employer says to you, the employee, you have to have health care. And the employee goes, no, I don't want health care. How does the employer deal with that situation? Because if I have 50 plus employees, I've offered full-time health care. I, as the employee, choose not to take it. I don't want to go to the exchange. Am I being penalized for them not having it?
No. And that's one of the positives of the law, in the sense that it's now my responsibility as a citizen to have that health insurance, or else I have a tax or a penalty, as the Supreme Court ruled on. And the good news is, as the employer, I've met my responsibility by offering a health plan that meets those minimum essential health benefits.
So just by offering it, they have met the requirement. And even if the employee chooses not to take it, that's on them, not on the employer.
Yes.
Okay. So the penalty would not apply if that's the case.
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're clear on that. Are there any other penalties or other things that employers should be aware of that could be coming with this new law?
Yeah, there's one that's going to affect quite a few employers. And I think the unintended consequence, it's going to make the hiring team more of a fiduciary. Because if an employer offering a health insurance plan meets the minimum essential coverage, the employee receives federal assistance because they can't afford the health insurance plan, then the employer is subject to a $3,000 fee or tax for each employee receiving a subsidy.
$3,000 tax?
Yes.
So take me through an example of how that might work.
So the employer offers the health insurance plan, pays X dollars, pays 25% of the premium. The employee qualifies for a subsidy from the government because they can't afford that. Then the employer would be subject to a $3,000
penalty
or fee.
Or fee because of that. So employers really do need to look at what plan they're bringing forth. Can they ask their employees questions to see if that determines? Or how does an employer kind of navigate that minefield of what they can and cannot ask the employee?
Legally, you can't ask somebody what they're making for an annual salary as far as a family is concerned. However, I think employers are going to get creative in how they ask leading questions when they're hiring candidates to better understand who's going to be qualifying for a subsidy and who won't be qualifying for a subsidy.
So your organization helps individuals, helps companies with those type of questions and how to phrase it and how to, you know, help the company mind this, or no?
No.
Okay.
No, we are agnostic about the health insurance. And we look at it as everybody should be covered. Let's get every individual into the system, because if we have that mission accomplished, then that means facilities and providers can now stop writing off bad debt, which would directly correlate to lower rates to the private pay community.
You know, I think it's important for people to understand the difference between a broker and someone who's helping you in terms of making sure that you can do your internal communication. And there is a difference between the two, right? You know, HR is in charge of creating paperwork and documents that are internally and legally binding so that people can be asked the right questions the proper way. You're a provider and helpful benefit provider for that organization, provide the information for them, but not going to provide the internal information for them.
Correct. We're licensed consultants. So for us, we're going to give a platform of services that we're going to offer.
Excellent. Okay. So essential benefits for healthcare. Is it state specific or is it now national?
It's a federal law.
Okay. It is federal. Can states make changes? Because there are state exchanges versus federal exchanges.
Correct. As you know, there's some states that didn't go through having their own exchanges set up. So therefore they put those individuals in those states on the federal exchange. Those are their options. They can either buy it through the federal exchange, which is healthcare.gov, or do it through an individual provider.
And there are four levels, right? Bronze, silver, gold, and platinum on the exchange.
Correct.
Okay. So take us through a little bit the differences between the four for the layman who is listening to this, the HR professional who doesn't quite understand the differences or understand how this works. Give like a couple minute overview of that.
I wish it was that simple, but it's extremely difficult.
Of course, I knew it. See, I love asking these questions.
The way the law reads, platinum equals 90% actuarial value of essential health package. Gold equals 80, 70 for silver, and 60 for bronze. And again, the key word being actuarial. So therefore, it can be, all plans are going to look different.
They are all going to look different. This is a complicated subject, isn't it? When you really, it used to be kind of simple. You had your healthcare plan, you kind of like went out and went to a broker like you and said, hey, I need healthcare. And you were presented all these different plans, but there's a lot more factors in it now, isn't there?
There is. When it comes to the deductible, when it comes to the out-of-pocket maximums, when it comes to the minimum essential benefits of what needs to be covered. So the nice part is because every health plan now has to cover the same minimum benefits, that does make it easier for the consumer in understanding what they're getting. Where it becomes difficult is, again, going back to those actuarial values.
We've been talking with Jason Allen, president of Northern Insurance Group. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some scenarios that employers can look at into how it makes healthcare easier for you. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Because you've booked with Booking.com, you, freedom lover, are on the road and carefree. You're not worried that dealership billboards spoil beautiful views or that the fresh, cool breeze gives you a mouthful of fumes. No, because you know in just a few more miles, you'll be free to rock around in the perfect Booking hotel, treehouse, or rustic cottage of your dreams. Thanks to Planet Earth's number one accommodation site, Booking.com. Booking.yeah!
I am pleased to announce another national sponsor for the HR Power Hour. It is the Northern Insurance Group. They do business, commercial, and personal insurance and are licensed agents in 28 states. Northern Insurance Group is an independent insurance agency with a staff that offers over 60 years of experience. They represent a carefully selected group of reputable insurance companies that will make the best decisions for their clients. Whether you are an individual, a group, an association, or a business, their staff is committed to excellence and making sure that you get the right insurance. You can count on an experienced staff at Northern Insurance Group to put together the best program available to you. So go to northerninsurancegroup.com. That's northerninsurancegroup.com. Or call 207-878-7602. That's 207-878-7602. HR Power Hour is proud to have you as a sponsor. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Jason Allen, president of Northern Insurance Group. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. It's here. It's real. All right. We've been talking a little bit about employers and, who have employees of under 50. We've been talking about employers that have over 50 employees. We've been talking about some of the nuances to the law, some of the penalties, some of the benefits. We've kind of gone through a lot here and a lot of the information. Your organization helps companies in this situation. You provide a service to try to help them understand how it works. We talked a little bit before this segment. I want to kind of, if you could, have you take us through what it is that a benefits broker should be doing and must be doing with their employer at this point to make it easier for them in healthcare.
Well, two things. I think one is you're going to have to understand what group size you have, whether it's large group or small group, because it's still amazing to us. There's a lot of employers out there that have less than 25 full-time employees, and they're eligible for a tax credit. And I think that's extremely important when you're the small employer. If you have 25 employees and the average salary is less than $50,000 a year, you could be eligible for a substantial tax credit or rebate from the government. And it's important for everybody to take advantage of that.
So there's an example where people need to know what it is that they actually are and what all the different benefits are to them to make it worthwhile. If you're not eligible for that, when an employer comes to you and they say, Jason, this stuff makes my head hurt. And I'm sure employers do. God knows I do. This stuff makes my head hurt. How can you simplify it for me? How do you bring it so that I, as the HR professional, the owner, can make it in tangible bites and stomach it and digest it and make the right decision?
We're seeing more and more defined contribution plans, and more employers are going to start hearing about that. So what should happen is you should look at your benefits as is, status quo, find out what the difference is. Then you should also be able to sit down with your consultant or broker and go over the pay or play penalty or modulator so you can understand exactly what that might be, whether you're going to save money or lose money by not having the proper benefit schedule in place. And then where the defined benefit comes in is employers are now looking at, we're just going to take this amount divided amongst everybody, and this is what you get per month from us to use this platform, which is choose your health insurance, choose your life insurance, choose your disability insurance, choose any type of benefit that is important to you with this money that we're allocating each month. The advantage to that is I may have health insurance through a spouse, so I want to get extra life insurance, or I want to buy disability insurance because I've never had it before, or I want to put more money into a retirement plan. So by doing the defined contribution model, the employee is now in the driver's seat.
Defined contribution means that a flat rate is paid by an employer to every individual. So, yes, right. Most of employers do medical benefits pre-tax. So now that's just income to you, correct? And so it would be taxable income at that point.
Correct.
So the trade-off is whether when I go on the exchange and I pay for it myself, whether I get a credit that is worth more than actually the pre-tax would have been. So there's a lot of calculation that goes involved with that.
Absolutely. But again, the nice thing is the employee is now in the driver's seat. They're deciding what they want to have for benefits. Whereas the traditional approach was the employer would offer, here's our health plan, here's our group ancillary plans, this is what you get. And that philosophy and that mindset is going to need to change and will change.
Employers, or if you want to call it, owners of some of the smaller businesses, provide health care, and most of it is a benefit to them in terms of being able to have a tax deduction for doing things like that. Does this change some of the format for owners of businesses in terms of them having now to calculate whether or not it's worth giving a defined contribution versus health care?
Well, that is one of the unintended consequences of this, is that as a nation or as a whole, they're looking for more ways to generate revenue. And this could come into play in 2014 or 2016. Does the employer still get to write this off?
In terms of being able to make that either taxable or non-taxable in terms of tax valuation, if
correct,
you want to call it. Okay.
And inside the law, they also have the mandatory reporting feature, which is going to be on everybody's W-2. So at the end of the year, it's going to be a little box that'll clearly state what you as the employee received for healthcare premiums from your employer. And as it stands right now, that is not taxable. But you don't know what's going to happen down the road.
Okay. We've talked a lot about minimal essential coverage, which is something that is important for people to understand. What exactly is MEC?
That's where all health plans have to provide a baseline of procedures. And it's going to be hospitalization, it's going to be outpatient, it's going to be preventive and wellness benefits, it's going to be benefits for the birth of a baby, and benefits for after the birth of the baby.
Okay, so these are minimum requirements that must be covered by every single plan.
Yes.
So questions have come up, and I'm sure you can understand that some people may not be in those categories. They may not be able to have children. They could be males, for example, and not have that need. Are there going to be plans that don't cover these at all, or you must have this in every single plan?
You must have this in every single plan.
Okay. So what do you think are some ways that employers can think about to help their employees get through this process and really understand it? What are some of the suggestions or tips that you would give employers to help them get through this whole process?
We recommend to our employer groups that you have your broker or consultant, whoever you're working with, go in and do small breakout sessions. Because as you've said a few times, there's a lot of material.
There is.
And when you sit in a large group, people can glass over. They can gain too much and just tune out after that. So really you want to do smaller sessions, allow the employee to ask as many questions as he or she needs to ask, because you want them to understand what their responsibilities are as an individual.
You know, the reform seems to present opportunities, but also risks for employers. Should companies be strategizing now prior to 2015? I mean, how early? You said a couple months before. Does it matter the size of the organization in terms of when they should be strategizing?
Strategizing would be for employer groups that are having 50 or more employees, because they're going to be subject to that 40% Cadillac or excise tax. And again, when you talk about that $10,000 threshold or the $27,000 threshold on families, is it the plan that's going to drive that, or the region that's going to drive that cost that they're in? So therefore, start looking now at your plan design in a way to hopefully mitigate that in 2 or 3 years down the road.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is such a big topic, right? The Affordable Care Act is such a big topic. There are people out there that get it, and there are people who are out there that just don't want to get it. There are employers that have their heads in the sand still, even though they know it's coming. But I think this year is a critical year for this in terms of really getting an understanding to every employer and making sure that they understand they do have to make some changes, or it's going to cost them a lot of money.
Every employer has no choice but to understand it, because it's here and they need to start wrapping their heads around it so they can make sure they're doing the right thing for themselves as well as their employees.
Yeah. And I've always said it, 99.9% of all employees want to do the right thing. That's a fact. I think they just have either waited to see what would happen, or, and there's still going to be changes. We all believe that there will be changes coming, and hopefully some to improve some of the challenges we talked about here today. But it is time to get off the fence and just, you know, get on with the program at this point.
Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to be taking a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about other benefits that are out there for employers, that your organization provides. And you talk about bundling their packages of benefits together. I think this is a great topic for the final segment. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And we've been talking with Jason Allen, president of Northern Insurance Group. And you're in 28 states, right?
We are.
That's great. When are you going to be in all 50?
Hopefully by the end of the year.
Okay. Boy, nothing like putting him on the spot, right? Yeah, this is one of those fun things we can do because we're on the radio.
Yes.
I can ask those questions. No, all kidding aside. You know, we've talked about the Affordable Care Act, but there are certainly more benefits out there than just, you know, medical insurance and all the changes. And while that's important, you know, companies always ask us, you know, whether it's in my real job, I say, as an owner of career management, you know, what are some of the new benefits that are out there? What are some of the things that are important for us to know about that's happening in the benefit world today? And I always say what I always say. An experienced broker makes all the difference in knowing how to best package benefits for your employees. So tell me a little bit about some of the other benefits, some of the things you are seeing that companies are doing that are exciting and would be good for, you know, HR professionals and owners to know.
You're seeing some of our large groups, like you were saying earlier, focus on 2018 with the Cadillac tax. Therefore, they're looking at the plan designs with the deductibles, moving towards a higher deductible with a higher out-of-pocket maximum. And then package that with a creative voluntary benefits package, which is going to have their critical illness in there. It's going to have their accident, illness, and injury package in there. Those plans are much less expensive than the traditional health insurance plan. Therefore, the employer will end up picking up the full freight for that plan. And the employee gets pretty excited about that.
When you're talking about life insurance, when you're talking about disability insurance, when you're talking about short-term, long-term disability, when you're talking about dental, when you're talking about some of the other things, is there a way to bring that whole package together and make it cost-effective for an employer?
Absolutely. And what we're seeing and what we're doing with our employers is by putting that on an intranet website or putting that on a web portal where the employee just goes in when they're sitting at home and they can view all their benefits online. They can enroll themselves online, delete themselves online from that benefit. So it makes it easier from an administrative standpoint, which is going to reduce cost as well.
Well, you're actually moving the burden onto the employee a little bit more as everything is going that way in this way as employers are trying to save costs and save benefits. Do we see the same type of escalation in cost in some of these other benefits? Or are they pretty stagnant?
They're stagnant, if not being reduced. the voluntary benefit market recognizes there's a huge opportunity for them right now. So those carriers are trying to be as aggressive as possible with their rating structure. And when the employer picks up the cost of that, therefore there's no adverse selection, the carrier's going to get pretty excited and be aggressive with the rate package.
Yeah, because it's a win-win for them, right? Because they're going to have more people coming into the system because there's more influx of benefit to every employee across the board. No, that makes sense. Any new benefits out there? Anything that is unique?
Well, I think we're seeing not so much unique, but almost not a good term, but it's happening, more recycled benefits in the sense that long-term care insurance being sponsored by the employer is coming back, critical illness being sponsored by the employer is coming back, whereas it's taken the last 5 years off, so to speak.
So these are ones that are coming back, that long-term care meetings, nursing home care and different things like that?
Or it's going to be home health care. Really, most people want to be able to remain home. So therefore, they're going to have an employer plan that's going to have home health care.
Okay, no, that's a great benefit. I mean, you usually don't see those plans, you're right, in being bought by employers. It's usually, those are pretty expensive at times.
Correct, on an individual basis. But when you provide it on a group basis, costs are reduced anywhere between 25% and 30%.
No, that's huge. That's a huge difference. Talk a little bit about what your organization does. Is it the same in every state? Are you across the board, benefits for all states? How does that work?
Yeah, our goal is to be uniform in every state with our package offering and consulting offering. We're really about looking long term. We can take the Band-Aid approach now and put a Band-Aid on things, or we can develop a long term strategy and a risk mitigation strategy.
When you're looking at employer needs, are they the same across the country, or do you find that there is areas out there that are different?
Geographically different, as well as every employer is unique in their situation and what's important to them and not important to them.
So are employers paying more of the cost today or less?
Right now, what we're seeing is the employer is picking up a little bit more, not much more, but just a little bit more because of the uncertainty as far as where things are still going to shake out with the Affordable Care Act. And we think in 2015, that's when we're going to see a big swing as far as employer funding and employee funding and cost shifting.
Yeah, no, it certainly seems to make sense based upon everything we're seeing out there at this point. Jason, let's give a little history on you. You know, somebody might say, well, I'm interested in what he said today. I might want to reach out and talk to him. What's his background? What's his history? Certainly they can go to the HRPowerHour.com after the show and look your bio up. Tell me a little about you.
Well, started out doing social work and very much enjoyed doing that. Worked with a lot of kids that were in the system, and then ultimately decided that wanted to keep working with people and realized that I was getting pretty burnt out with social work. So I moved on and got into this field, and it's great. I can still work with people, help employers save money, come up with strategic plans for their employees, and help them retain, if not get new employees.
Well, it's kind of like a lot of employers would tell you that it's like social work out there.
A little
right?
bit.
Right?
Everybody has complaints.
Everybody has complaints. Everything always is not necessarily the way they expected and so forth. So I certainly understand that. When you're thinking about the challenges you see for 2014 and 15, what are some of the, excluding the Affordable Care Act, we talked about that, what are some of the other challenges that employers are going to face in the benefit world?
The biggest challenge is going to be, I think, backlash from employees as far as when out-of-pockets become expensive. And employees, as well as us, which are us as individual consumers, need to be engaged. We need to become better shoppers of healthcare. We need to start looking at what an MRI costs, because if you go to one facility down the street, it's going to be $1,300, and you can go 5 miles down the road and it's only $600, and it's the exact same test. And I think until we as a nation start becoming better consumers of healthcare, I don't understand, or I don't see how cost of the actual healthcare is going to come down.
There's been a lot of talk, and you know, not going to get into the politics of this at all, but there's a lot of talk about keeping your own doctor and then, you know, being able to do that. Are you hearing from employers and employees questions having to do with that when they can't?
Yeah, we have a lot of those questions. We also have some provider groups, and it's interesting to watch them decide what they're going to participate in and not participate in. And as you just said, politics aside, I really think that's where both sides of the aisle need to get together. And again, focus on what's working, because there are some positive things, and focus on what's not working, and sit down with employers and actively engage with them versus dictating.
You talk to a lot of other benefit companies, certainly out there, peers in the industry. Is there a concern about the industry itself?
Yes, we've seen across the board in the United States, brokerages, there's been a mass consolidation of brokerages, whether they're getting consumed by some larger agencies or simply just going out of business. And there's also been a significant layoff in the industry, whether they're getting rid of admin assistants or account executives or account managers. There's just a lot of uncertainty still on how this is going to play out.
That all said, you're growing. You're expanding. You're going across the country. What is one of the unique things you can say about your company, your organization, that makes you the go-to person?
You have to embrace change, and that's where we're at. We are at a standpoint, or we are at a crossroads, in that we need to change the U.S. healthcare system, the way healthcare is delivered and consumed. And there's a lot of exciting things that are going on. And I think those that don't want to look at it that way are really going to be left behind.
Well, that's an interesting way to end this topic. I think you've done a great job trying to explain a very tough subject, which is the Affordable Care Act. I certainly know you, and I can endorse that fact that I know you.
Thank you.
And you do a great job. And, you know, one of the things that I would tell the audience is having the right broker makes a difference, and it can either make or break a company in terms of being able to provide the right cost-effective benefit, as well as having the right partner in this mission to go across. And we appreciate you being on the show today, Jason. And when people want to reach you, they can go to what website?
NorthernInsuranceGroup.com.
That's NorthernInsuranceGroup.com. Or, of course, you can go to the HR Power Hour after this show, and you can see Jason's comments as you can listen to them and download them. You can also see a link on there in regards to listening to the show and contacting him directly. And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to NorthernInsuranceGroup.com. 5 Important Interview Questions You're Not Asking by Chris Selinsky. The 5 most important questions are actually variations of common interview themes. The first one, tell me about your very first paying job. Tell me about the achievements in your life you are most proud of and the obstacles or problems you had to overcome to achieve them. Tell me about your last performance appraisal. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank yourself as a, put in whatever the job title is, why did you give yourself that number? And then finally, what one question would you like to ask me? Of all the questions you could have asked, why did you choose that question? And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Anne Marie Story. She is a partner at the law firm of Rudman and Winchell, and she is going to be talking about FMLA issues. What is the difference between state and federal FMLA? And a whole bunch of other questions. So that's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.